Anytime Fitness. Zero joining fee today until midnight. Make healthy happen. Search Anytime Fitness and join. Blunston. Two things you never skimp on. A good mattress and a better pair of boots from Blunston.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Great to have you with us on this Wednesday feature interview time. We generally go around the country and around the world to chat to really interesting people, Tim. And oftentimes it's you that come up with these people, which I admire and respect, because you've got a very inquiring mind that takes you into different places.
I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I listened to Owen on the Mastery series with Michael Gervais, and I thought that it was fascinating. Obviously, you and I have been elite sports, and we've been around sports all our lives, and every now and then you listen to somebody who presents in a slightly different way based on a slightly different philosophy, sometimes a greatly different philosophy, and that's the way that I found Owen.
And he has been good enough to join us from the Cotswolds in the UK. G'day, Owen.
Hi, guys.
Great to talk to you. We're fascinated with your story. I guess what's on your plate right now is the Olympics. Is that what's occupying your time most?
Yeah, I'm pretty busy. Helping the Team GB get ready for Tokyo, also helping the England football team. We've got the Euros coming up. And I'm working with Harlequins Rugby Club in London, who are having a bit of a rebuild phase coming up. So, yeah, I'm pretty busy.
So how do you find yourself in this position where you're obviously in demand, you've got the UK's premier sporting organisations that are all wanting to get in touch with you and have you on as part of their whole setup? How do you find yourself in this position?
that's a really good question. I'm completely unqualified in many ways for what I do. You know, I'm surrounded by people who went to university and studied sports psychology and physiology and all sorts of things, or went through as professional athletes and graduated into a coaching or management role, but I didn't do any of that. I grew up in New Zealand in the South Island. I studied law, really enjoyed that, and really got into this career sort of accidentally, just by being invited to get involved in a few projects and getting exposed to what some inspirational team cultures look like, and being asked by people to have conversations around that, and ultimately that became coaching. And for the last 6 or 7 years, I've been doing that full time. So I'm still not completely sure. I think possibly the fact that I come from left field is an advantage, because I do think there is a lot of both corporate and coach speak around team culture and leadership, and I think some people probably bored with it and are open to a different fresh ideas.
And you provide a fresh idea, Owen. You talk about team culture. We talk about team culture a lot on this radio program here, about what makes great teams and great individuals in sport, that type of thing. As a young man, you lost your father. I think you were, 5 or 6 years of age when your father passed away. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was 5, yeah.
And as a 12-year-old, you had the curiosity to go and sort of search and find out more about your dad and his connection to the Indigenous New Zealanders, the Maori way of life. What did you learn when you actually did that investigation as a young person?
Yeah, you're 100% right. My dad passed away when I was 5, so it was quite tough for my family. My mum was 39, and she left. You know, she was left with a 12-year-old boy, 10-year-old boy, 5-year-old boy, and a 2-year-old girl. My father was part Maori and part English, and my mother was mainly Irish ancestry. And I think growing up in New Zealand, you watch the All Blacks, you see the haka, you're surrounded by the Maori culture. And I always knew I had a connection to it, but because my father was an only child and his mother lived a very long way away, I just wasn't connected to it growing up. And my siblings dealt with that all right, but I always found that incredibly frustrating. And ultimately, when I was 12, I wrote to the tribe and just asked them what they could tell me about who I am. And they wrote back with a very powerful letter, but it included a document which was entitled Whakapapa, Whakapapa, and then it had a list of my ancestors back 25 generations to my father. And it was no commentary, no information, it just had their names. And some of those names were what I'd been taught were mythical characters, back to Hawaiki, our ancient homeland. And that just connected me to something so much bigger than myself that it sort of blew me away, and it's never left me. So quite, you know, now when I work with Team GB, the first thing I actually do is we create their whakapapa. We go back to 1896 and we recreate their identity story, and we reconnect the athletes today with their ancestors. And our values that we talk about are not off Google. Our values are the things that this identity story tells us. So our values are shorthand for who we are. And all of them have to be wrapped in very powerful stories. And that's just sort of natural for me. But in the teams I work with all across the world, for some reason, you know, people seem to connect to it.
So does that, do you extrapolate that out for the team then? The ancestry of the team is their history and their tradition. Is that what helps you define in the modern day what this team stands for?
Absolutely. I mean, human beings have a need to belong. That's a biological fact. If we join a group and we haven't been there before and we don't know the people very well, we get very anxious. We have an anxiety reaction. So we need to do things in order to calm people down and make them feel safe. So our need to belong, but there's always a question of belong to what? And, you know, I was amazed coming into some high-performing sports environments, including international teams, where it was never explained who we are, what you belong to. Yes, you wear your national shirt, and the attitude was pretty much, you know, you should figure it out for yourself. You're representing your country, or you're representing your state. That's enough. But it's not enough. Human beings are hardwired to receive a story of this is our tribe and this is who we are, these are our ancestors and this is what makes us different and this is what makes us special. So really just doing those things can make a profound difference. One of the teams I worked with was the South African cricket team, and I worked with them for 10 years, one of the most diverse teams in sport, and they didn't have an identity story. But once we created it, what we noticed was that the players from ethnic minorities, even including people like Hashim Amla, when they came into the team, they started to perform straight away. Well, historically, they'd taken a long time to get going. And, you know, all the analysts and the media and the commentators have their view of why they were slow. But if you're inside the circle, you understand that when you reach out to people and put your arm around them and say, you belong here, you've earned the right to be here, you're a brother, it makes a massive difference in how they settle in and how they perform quickly.
Owen, what's at the core of a great team, do you think?
The future. So whatever you've achieved in the past is what it is. For some teams like the All Blacks, it's, you know, pretty awesome. Other teams, it's not awesome. What really matters is the vision that we're going to share together. And so for me, with leaders, it's not just looking back at all. You know, don't mistake me on that. I think that's a big part of our identity. But actually, from a performance point of view, the critical thing is, do we have a shared vision of what we're trying to do and how we're going to go about it? And when I say that, I'm not talking about a strap line of winning a World Cup. I'm talking about something you can actually visualize. And, you know, we are a highly visual species. I think other than birds of prey, we have the, you know, the best visual system in the animal kingdom. So good leaders are able to paint really, really good pictures of this is what we could do together. And this is how we could do it. And, you know, some teams spend zero time on visioning. That's all tactics and strategy and technical stuff. Other teams spend days and repeat about the visioning. And if you, you know, great coaches like Pete Carroll from the Seattle Seahawks, Steve Kerr from the Golden State Warriors, they will say that they see their job as a coach is keeping everyone, athletes and staff, connected to the vision every single day. And every practice, every meeting, every game, every review, you are referencing it back to this vision that we're trying to move towards together. And, you know, we love those mental pictures of what we're doing. It gets us excited and motivated and keeps us aligned with each other.
You talk about diversity. You're now currently working with the British Olympic team. I can't imagine that you would have worked with a more diverse team than the British Olympic team, given how many different sports are associated with that. How do you create a collective vision for a team so huge as the British Olympic team?
You know, my job, the way I go about my job, is working with the leaders. So I coach the leaders. I'm not coaching the 400-plus team. My job is to give the leaders the best chance to create a competitive advantage from our culture. So we want our people from all of our diversity, doesn't matter who you are, we want you to come in, want you to feel you belong there, want you to feel like everyone has your back, want you to feel like this is a really great environment for you to be at your best. So my job is to coach them around that. And, you know, one of the things we've done with Team GB is, because we do, as you point out, have an incredibly diverse team, one of the things we've done is we've created that whakapapa. It's a word I use. It's not the word teams use. It's what I use. But we've created this identity story of Team GB back to 1896. But what we've really done is highlighted the diversity of the makeup of the team. So our first female athlete, Charlotte Cooper in 1900, who won 2 gold medals, she was profoundly deaf. We've actually brought her back to life to explain over 50% of this team will be female. We want them to know the mother figure, if you like, the first female ancestor. We had our first black athlete, Team GB, in 1920, Harry Edwards, and the first female black athlete in 1968, Anita Hill. We have our first Muslim athlete, we have our first Sikh athlete, the first gay athlete, the first married same-sex couple athletes. We've got all of these, and what we've done is created a pretty powerful story and film, actually, for the whole team. Someone likened it once that our job is to put a Christmas tree up and let every individual decorate it with their own personal meaning. And that is the way I like to think about it. So I will help them create those type of things. So when everyone comes into that environment, they feel they've got some real belonging and safety and some respect, and they can just be themselves and absolutely fly.
Owen, you can catch Owen's book, by the way. We're going to run out of time. We've got 1,000 questions we'd like to ask. Belonging, the Ancient Code of Togetherness is the name of it. We're on the verge of our biggest winter football codes. We're about to start in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I'm interested in this. If we can just go back to the great coaches say they keep the whole organisation on track about pushing towards the vision. What if after 8 weeks the vision that you set is no longer achievable? One of the football clubs here says, this is our goal and our vision, and we need to make the 8, we need to do whatever it is. And then after 6-7 weeks, for whatever reason, that is no longer achievable. What do you do then?
Well, I would distinguish there between your mission and your vision. So for me, a vision is something which is medium and long term of what we're trying to achieve. It's not a trophy. It's achieving, it could be achieving greatness, it could be winning multiple times, but it is something that we're always striving for and doesn't come to an end in the next 8 weeks. A mission is the short-term part of our vision. So we have this vision of what we want to achieve, and we set short-term missions. There's teams I work with right now, we have a vision for 3 or 4 years. We know we can't win a competition right now. We know we're not ready yet. We haven't built the team yet. We haven't got the culture yet. So what we set different goals and a different mission for this season. So I suppose that's a distinction which is important. If a team is one of the top teams and has a disastrous start to the season and they're not going to make the playoffs halfway through, and then that's a brutal reality of being a human being, is that sometimes our dreams don't come true. And in those cases, we have to just pause, we have to have a reality check, and we have to reset the vision.
Owen, just one final question. We're running out of time. We always do. It's been great to catch up and speak to you this morning. But as you move from sport to sport, and you've worked with a range of sports around the world, at the heart of an athlete, a great athlete that you've been associated with, what's one of the great similarities between athletes of different sports that you've found, the great athletes?
Well, I don't know if this will surprise people, but the trait that I would associate with all the world-class athletes and champions I've been lucky enough to work with is humility. And that doesn't mean to say you don't have an ego. Ego is very important. We've all got an ego. And it can really help us and it can hinder us. But you can still have an ego and have humility. And humility in the sense that you've still got a hell of a lot to learn. Humility in the sense that you are representing other people when you're out there and it's not all about yourself. And humility in the sense of, I owe this to my teammates. You know, this is not all about me. This is about them. And those are the traits that I think you need to become a real true champion. And a champion is not just how many trophies you win, it's how much respect. Or in New Zealand, we would say how much mana you have from the people.